of the United States of America. Go it alone. We don't care about anybody else, even if you are our own friends. So, yes, United States of America was the country that decided to one-sided unilaterally leave the JCPOA.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Sheikh Ali, what do you have to say about it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Well, as Sayyid beautifully summarized here, JCPOA is an agreement between the world's so-called superpowers and the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is definitely a regional power, to say the least, and inshallah on its way to becoming that superpower and have a very serious role in the entire world dynamics. So the idea was because of the fame and popularity of the Islamic Republic of Iran and its notions, its human-based principles, which they were and have been standing on, they tried to contain the Islamic Republic and its development and its progress. And what did they use to contain the Islamic Republic? It was this deal. It's called JCPOA, which is also known as Barjam in Farsi. And, you know, the purpose of this deal was to really contain the progress and development of the Islamic Republic of Iran when it comes to its nuclear enrichment program. Now, for our listeners, you know, one thing has to be very clear, that there are two things that need to be understood. One is nuclear enrichment, which is the right of every nation, and the other is nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. Which is the right of none, and because of its collateral damage.
Right, and nuclear enrichment is the same as nuclear energy?
It's the nuclear energy, right? Okay. So you enrich uranium to get to a certain level where it converts into energy, which can be then used for the betterment of the society and the development of nations and countries. Now, this is a right of every nation to enrich uranium so mm-hmm. they can fulfill their needs when it comes to energy. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to nuclear weapons, it's an entirely different ballgame. You enrich uranium to a point where you turn it into weapons, mm-hmm. and these are the weapons of mass destruction. Mm-hmm. And who has it? Only a select few countries in the world have it. Mm-hmm. And who has used it? It's only the United States of America who
only
has used it.
Only one country that's used it.
Right? Mm-hmm. So this weapon program is an issue which, according to Islam, as the leader of the Islamic Republic and the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said, mm-hmm. it is haram, it is forbidden to attain and to make and to possess and to use these weapons, Islamically speaking. So the Islamic Republic of Iran was never, is not, and will not be pursuing the nuclear weapons,
right,
which the West has it, right? Israel has it, right? Without signing the NPT even, right? Islamic Republic, in principle, is against this whole acquisition of these weapons because of the nature of these weapons and how they cause the collateral damage. And it, you know, you remember Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
So Islamic Republic is against acquiring those weapons, but Islamic Republic is adamant and is insistent, and rightly so, for the acquisition of nuclear energy,
right,
which is a right of every nation. So they want to contain Iran, contain its progress, contain its development, and hence they came up with this so-called deal, which is the JCPOA, so that nuclear program stops. And why do they not want Iran to acquire it? Just very quickly, last point.
Acquire nuclear energy.
Energy. Mm. Because they don't want to see an Islamic Iran which is independent.
Mm.
They want dependency. The West wants dependency. And they want Iran to be subjugated to the West and look towards the West when it comes to fulfilling their own needs.
Yeah, if it's self-sufficient, then it no longer has any need for the West.
Exactly.
So,
It's very interesting, this point that Sheikh Ali brought up about nuclear energy. Right. So in one of the recent speeches from the month of February, I think towards the end of February, the leader of the Islamic Ummah, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he has a very interesting point where he brings this up. So he says that at the current time, the West is buying barrel after barrel of oil at an incredibly cheap price. I mean, they're pretty much their bottled water is more expensive than the oil that is being sold to Western countries in today's time. Okay, and oil, I believe it was Henry Kissinger, he said that if you control the oil, you control the governments. So they're controlling the governments based upon Henry Kissinger's. He was Secretary of State in one of the United States government, very famous guy.
One of the think tanks.
Yeah, one of those very famous. And so he said if you control the oil, you control the governments. And so now we find that they are not only controlling the oil, but the governments at a very, very cheap price. So after this, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, right, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he says that, but if these countries, for example, France or Germany or the United States or the UK, if they were oil producers, they wouldn't even sell us this same oil bottle by bottle, right? So he's saying we're selling it to these guys barrel by barrel. And if it was them, the ones who were producing oil, they wouldn't even sell it to us bottle by bottle.
And they do it, right? Look at the technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are certain bans on technologies that, for instance, Iranians are not allowed to pursue.
Yeah.
Right? They do it.
Yeah.
This is the nature of the West. But yeah, it's a...
Yeah, bottle by bottle, right? And so then after that, he says, and this is the vision of this leader, a vision that you do not see in any other so-called Muslim governments or Muslim leaders in other parts of the Muslim world. He very clearly says, and this is from last month, February speech, he says that nuclear energy is the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not want us to be able to have our own nuclear energy, right? And he says, why? It's just like the oil. So what they want to do is to be able to control nuclear energy and then in the future, you know, charge us an arm and a leg for this very same nuclear energy that, as Sheikh Ali said, it should be free for all. It is the right for all nations. So a very interesting thing on nuclear energy.
There's really the dependence on the West, right? They don't want to see any nation to be independent, let alone the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is standing on human principles, right?
Right.
They don't want to see an Islamic Iran which is independent, and that's what it boils down to.
Inshallah, let's continue with this thought on dependency, because they want us to be economically dependent on America and the West. They want us to be dependent in other ways too, right?
Yeah, technologically dependent in terms of our food needs, in terms of the energy need, in terms of our well-being, you know, let it be vaccines right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing hard for us to just go and get their vaccines, what they are developing, no matter how flawed those vaccines are, no matter how untested those vaccines are. Why are they pushing for it?
Yeah.
Well, they're pushing simply not because they want to help any nation, let alone the nation of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They are pushing so the other nations are dependent on them. And this is one thing that Islam has taught us, right? Islam, even at a very individual level, at a very singleton level, Islam has pushed for independency, right? Islam doesn't want to see beggars on the street asking other people for their livelihood. Islam doesn't want to see these small little setups to be dependent on the bigger setups, right? Islam doesn't want to see these small countries, the third world countries, to be dependent on the so-called superpowers, right? Islam has taught us the lesson of integrity, dignity, independence, right? Self-sufficiency, depending on your own abilities, depending on your own resources, depending on your own people. You know, this is a message for the governments of the world, especially the governments of the third world countries, that you are expected and supposed to be independent. You have to be depending on your own strengths and your own people. And this is the message of the leader of the Islamic Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. One of the things that I see with Iran is, and it's really fascinating, how they believe in empowering other nations. See, when West comes to help any nation, their model is to make them dependent, more dependent and more dependent, right?
Yes, yes.
So they're like, you know, completely controlled, manipulated, and their resources are looted and used. But when it comes to the Islamic Republic helping other nations, it is beautiful, right? They try to empower that nation.
Yeah.
You have seen it in case of Syria. You have seen it in case of Iraq. You have seen it in case of Yemen. You are seeing it as a matter of fact, right? Palestine, for instance, right? It's not that Iran sent like all of these military men and, you know, fighter jets and everything to Palestine. No, they said, you are going to determine your own fate, right? You have to stand tall on your feet against the oppressors and aggressors. And yes, we will help if you want to stand up, right? Yeah. This is empowerment, right? This is way different than, you know, looking at another nation as if, oh, now they're stuck. So let's just abuse them, misuse them, and, you know, control them.
You know, it's funny that you, it's really interesting actually that you mentioned dependency even when it comes to food, because America, one of their plans is to control world food, isn't it, through these big corporations. There's actually a hadith that I heard just yesterday from Imam Sadiq. He said that one who worries about his sustenance has actually sinned. It's a form of sinning to worry about your sustenance of today or tomorrow, right? And it just goes to show you that Islam really does want people to be independent, because it's through fear that they actually control people. It's through fear that you won't be able to provide for yourself, fear that you won't be able to produce your own energy, your own food. I don't know if you've heard, Sayed, about Henry Kissinger's 1974 plan.
No, go ahead.
There was a classified 200-page study in which the study falsely claims that population growth in so-called lesser developed countries was a grave threat to U.S. national security.
Right.
So since then, they've been plotting to actually stop the growth, the population growth in other countries. And food has a major role to play with it.
Yeah, I don't know if you, I don't think we have too much time on the program, but if our listeners, they do a little bit of research on, for example, companies such as Monsanto and genetically modified seeds that can only be bought by companies, and there are seeds that do not reproduce other plants, a very interesting thing to research. But one thing that I think is important is this cultural dependency as well, that the West is trying to create all over the world, where it is their culture that needs to be implemented across the globe. Whether it's their music or it's their ethics, their morality, their philosophies, their everything. Also a very dangerous thing, cultural dependency upon the West.
Yeah. They wish for other countries, especially Iran, to be dependent on them in various different ways. Nuclear energy is one of them. Food is one of them. Just very quickly, America actually adopted as official policy in November 1975 by President Gerald Ford this food control, this population control. It outlined a covert plan to reduce population growth in those countries through birth control and also implicitly war and famine. That's all we have time for today. Inshallah, next time we're going to be talking about the JCPOA more and delving deeper into the psyche behind this whole phenomenon. From myself, from Sayed Mehdi, and from Sheikh Ali, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is Viewpoints coming to you from IRIB English Radio.
You're the reason my life's worth living. You're the reason I'm alive. I'd be lost without you. You're the reason that I strive. You're my destiny. You're my revenue. You're the reason that I breathe. You are all.
Spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open, no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, He is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين إنه خير ناصر ومؤين. The month is the month of Sha'ban, the month of Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم. The occasions in which we do have some relevance to our imams, such as the birthday of imams or martyrdoms of imams, we should have some good benefits of these occasions in seeking a proximity to God and performing our responsibility and duties toward these imams. And the one who is aware of his own personality and his relationship to his own imam can take benefit more of these occasions. Then let us focus on ourselves, focus on the day and night that we are in, and seek God's forgiveness, mercy, and blessings through our imams, especially Imam al-Husayn alayhi salatu wassalam. Talking about the personality of Imam al-Husayn is not so easy for me, because Imam is such a notion. We cannot talk about the depth of this personality. But to the extent of our own understanding, we can talk a little bit about his characteristics and nobility, and take our own benefit to the extent of our own perception of this Imam. Just one point I want to focus on, and then to go next to that point and come to an end, inshallah, at the end, good conclusion I want to mention. Imam had many, many characteristics, and you all know about most of them. I don't want to talk about these things. Just one issue is very important for me in the life of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salatu wassalam, and that is his generosity. I remember a story. In this story, one of the Arabs, you know, Bedouin Arab, came to Imam al-Husayn asking for something, some debt that he had. He said, "Oh Husayn, because I guaranteed full, you know, payment of blood price for somebody, and now I'm empty-handed, I don't have enough money to pay, then I decided to come to the door of the most generous person, and that is you. I'm asking for that money, if you give me." Imam said, "I want to ask you three questions. If you answer the first one, I'll give you 1/3 of the money. If you answer the second one, I'll give you 2/3 of your money and debt. If you answer the whole question that I'm, you know, asking, then you can receive the whole money and the debt that you're wanting." He said, "You are Imam and the most knowledgeable person. You're asking me something, and you're expecting that I can be able to do that? To answer the questions?" "Okay." Imam said, "Prophet Muhammad had something here. He said, generosity, goodness is due to the extent of knowledge. If you want to pay something, you have to consider the understanding of that person who is in need." He said, "Okay, if you want me to be so, then I'm ready. If I know the answer, I can talk about the answer. If I don't know, I can learn it from you. This is the best occasion for learning." Imam started to ask the first question. Ayyul a'mal afdal? What is the best deed in your point of view? There are many, many deeds are recommended in Islam. Which one is the best? He said, Al-Imanu billah. Faith in God is the best deed. If you believe in God, then you've done the best action. If you don't believe, nothing works. And other works are useless. And other actions are rewardless. First, believe in God. So, believe and faith is counted as an action here. And this is the best action because this is the action of heart and soul. Aqdul qalb. So, this is some action. It's going to be done by our heart. And the best action, believe in God. Well done. The second question. فَمَنْ نَجَاتُ مِنَ الْهَلَكَ What is the salvation and safety from the danger? You want to save yourself, your life? What is the way for that? To be immune from danger. Is there another way for that? He said, "الثقة بالله." Trust in God. Reliance in God. You know, sometimes we're thinking about a supporter for us to support us in our difficulties. We're seeking for a helper to help us in our need. In our difficulties. The best helper and supporter is God Himself. You have to rely on God, not other people. God is the most strongest one. He is strong. He is stable. He is powerful. We have to trust in God, not other people. Well done. This is the second question. You answered them successfully. The third one and the final question. Imam asked the person, فَمَا يُزَيِّنُ الرَّجُلُ What adorns human being? What is the adornment of mankind? Is that best dressing? Is that gold and silver? Is that fashion that we have today? What is the adornment of mankind? He said, عِلْمٌ مَعَهُ حِلْمٌ This is the adornment of mankind. Knowledge accompanied by حِلْم, tolerance, insight, patience. If you're alim, without practicing any kind of tolerance, then this ilm is not useful for you. You have to tolerate another people who are knowledgeable or lay people. You have to stand them. Yes, you may face some people who are against your own idea, who are against your dignity. They behave in a way, they harm your dignity, your position in the society. You have to tolerate them. We understand all these things from the tradition of Prophet and the other Imams. How they tolerate the lay people. They didn't know a respectful way of treating, but Prophet and Imams stand them. This is something we have to understand. And focus on brothers. قال عليه السلام فإن أخطأه ذلك Imam asked the person, if he missed that, then what? If there's no, you know, science with tolerance, is there another thing to you know, replace that? He said, فَمَالٌ مَعَهُ مُرُوءَ Wealth and property accompanied by generosity. If you have property without generosity, then you're wasting your time. Then you're not worthy of being, you know, respected by the other people. If you have mal, properties, wealth, you have to give it in the way of Allah. You have to engage in some charities. Because there are some, you know, amount of your money are belong to another people, for the needy people. All of these things are not yours. You have to think about other people. قال عليه السلام فإن أخطأه ذلك. If he missed that again, what is the duty? What is the best action after that? The Arab said, فقر معه صبر. Poverty accompanied by patience. Poverty is bad situation if there is no patience in that. But if you tolerate, if you stand, if you, you know, practice iman, patience, tolerance in that situation, then this is adornment for you. Then the adornment is the situation in which we're going to practice our own duties and responsibility. No matter to be a poor person or to be a rich person, you have to practice your own duty and responsibility. And then Imam said, فَإِنْ أَخْطَاهُ ذَلِكَ. If he missed that again, so what? قَالْ فَصَائِقَةٌ تَنْزِلُ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ فَتُحْرِقُهُ. Then a thunderbolt comes from the sky, hits it, and burns it. He should be dead. He is not right to live then. Okay? Then Imam smiled and gave him, you know, the whole price of the blood he guaranteed. And then he gave him extra. He gave him his ring to spend for his life expenses and for himself. Okay? So, Imam says to be a generous person, you have to consider the level of understanding and the knowledge of the needy people. And to the extent of their knowledge, you can pay. Okay? This is something mentioned here. Oh Allah, for the sake of this Imam, please forgive our sins and please put us among real Shia of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and among the helpers of Imam al-Mahdi. Ajjal Allah ta'ala farajahu al-Sharif. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Prosperous is he,
prosperous is he,
who spends his wealth on the poor and needy, who speaks a kind word to kin and neighbor, ever grateful for Allah's favor. Guided is he,
guided is he,
who prays Salah with punctuality, early morning tahajjud he prays, for Allah's pleasure and nearness he craves.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah. Today's great tip, the secrets of congregational prayers in our Ubudiyah, and why some people might not participate in these congregational prayers. So, dear listeners, it's really great to have you with us on the program. We're talking about how congregational prayers truly have these great rewards when it comes to our ubudiyah, and it has great rewards both spiritually and materialistic benefits. But more specifically, we've been talking about some of the excuses, some of the reasons which people bring up in order to not attend the congregational prayers. Now, as we have said in many other programs, many times these excuses aren't really justifiable. They really are just excuses. So we wanted to go ahead and take some of these excuses which are brought forth in not wanting to attend congregational prayers and really nullify and void these excuses so that we can attend the congregational prayers, whether it is in our own home or at the local masjid, the mosque, or the Husseiniyah or the Islamic Center, and really gain the benefits of this specific form of worship as regards to our ubudiyah. Now, there are people who associate the shortcomings of the imams, the prayer leaders, kith and kin, meaning his relatives or his family. And so, because of the shortcomings of the prayer leader's family, people have a tendency to not accept this individual as the imam. So, for example, the imam's son, or the imam's daughter, or the imam's wife, you know, or even if we go farther, the imam's father-in-law, the imam's cousin, these people have some sort of shortcoming, some sort of flaw, some sort of mistake, some sort of imperfection, and because these people have an imperfection, we don't accept the prayer leader. Now, of course, you know, we have to keep everything in balance. Yes, if it is the immediate family of the imam who is doing, you know, bad things, and I'm talking about bad things, you know, whether it's, cheating or lying or stealing or, committing haram acts, you know, drinking alcohol or something like that. Yeah, these are things that need to be addressed because this immediate family member of the prayer leader of the imam does reflect not only on him, but it has an impact on the society and the community as well. But here what we're talking about is we're talking about shortcomings. So the imam's son is really hyperactive, you know, or he really likes to play video games, or the, you know, the imam's daughter
is a little bit rude. She doesn't say thank you. She doesn't say please. You know, it's these kind of shortcomings is what we're talking about. And these shortcomings, my dear friends, do not reflect the Imam. And definitely these shortcomings of the Imam's family, whether immediate or distant, does not take the Imam out of being just, right? These are normal shortcomings that people have. They should be forgiven. They should be looked over. And if possible, sure, they should be rectified and helped and supported. But definitely the shortcomings of the Imam's kith and kin should not be a reason for us to not benefit from the spiritual and worldly benefits of congregational prayers.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of the program, Foresight. My name is Muhammad, and today I'd like to read to you the English translation of an excerpt from Munajatul Raghibin, The Beseechers. My God, though my stores for traveling to you are few, my confidence in you has given me a good opinion. Though my sin has made me fear your punishment, my hope has let me feel secure from your vengeance. Though my misdeed has exposed to me to your penalty, my excellent trust has apprised me of your reward. Though heedlessness has put to sleep my readiness to meet you, knowledge has awakened me to your generosity and boons. Though excessive disobedience and rebellion have estranged me from you, the glad tidings of forgiveness and good pleasure have made me feel intimate with you. I ask you, by the splendors of your face and the lights of your holiness, and I implore you by the tenderness of your mercy and the gentleness of your goodness to verify my opinion in expecting your great generosity and your beautiful favor through nearness to you, proximity with you, and enjoyment of gazing upon you. Here I am, addressing myself to the breezes of your freshness and tenderness, having recourse to the rain of your generosity and gentleness, fleeing from your displeasure to your good pleasure, and from you to you, hoping for the best of what is with you, relying upon your gifts, utterly poor toward your guardian.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were talking about, which were some of the common excuses that are put forth for not going to the congregational prayers. And we were going one by one and kind of trying to null and void these excuses that are brought forth for not going to the congregational prayers, so that we can one by one remove these obstacles and join the spiritual and worldly benefits of congregational prayers, especially as regards to our ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah. Now, there are some people who, out of their arrogance or their pride, unfortunately, there are people who are not willing to participate in the congregational prayers under the leadership of a young person, relatively young person or a relatively poor person, in spite of that prayer leader, that imam, being sincere, committed, religious, and meritorious. It is interesting, but we also find this same phenomenon in the history of Islam, where they used to say to Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, that he is too young for the position of an imam, and thus they didn't allow him to be the caliph and the imam of the Muslims. When in fact the Holy Prophet himself made Osama, towards the end of his life, he made Osama, who was a young man, perhaps around the same age of 18 or 19, made him the commander of the army. And again, so the Prophet, based upon his courage, his sincerity, his committedness, determination, his steadfastness, made Osama commander of the army. And here again, people had a problem with this as well. Dear friends, age and social status and economic status, financial status, the kind of house you have, the kind of car you drive, the price tag of the clothes that you wear, these things, dear friends, are not the value, they're not the credentials necessary for one to be a good Muslim or for one to be the prayer leader. The thing that is of value, the thing which gives credential, is the knowledge of an individual, the wisdom of the individual, the religiosity of an individual, the sincerity of an individual, the knowledge and wisdom capacity that an individual has, and perhaps even the potential that an individual has, the capability, the ability that a person has. These things, dear friends, are what matters. And it is these things that need to be taken into consideration when we're talking about the prayer leader, not the age or the financial status of a person.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is farstoday.com.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Muhammad Khalfan.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, wa bihi nasta'in, wa sallallahu ala Muhammad, wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. One of the most beautiful sayings of Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam is on optimism, which in Arabic we say husnul dhan. When a person is optimistic with regard to somebody, he is muhsinul dhan, one who does husnul dhan. With regard to Allah, how should we be? This is what Imam is trying to tell us and teach us. He is reported to have said, ahsinul dhan billah, fa inna man hassana dhannahu billah, kana Allah inda dhannihi. It is a very powerful statement. Listeners, if you come to understand the depth of this statement, your whole life will change. We are told here, have a good opinion of Allah. That means think well about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Don't jump into conclusions. Sometimes you find that, let's say a person gets sick, you start complaining, oh Allah, it is because you made him sick. Don't do that. Think properly. Sometimes you get hurt, sometimes you get a loss. These losses and this getting hurt and all these problems is sometimes very good for you. Sometimes it's because what you have done to yourself. But don't just say that, oh Allah, why did you make me sick? Why did you make my mother sick, for example? Why did you make this person die, and so on? Whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is doing for us, it is the best. Obviously, this is important to know, that whatever happens is by His permission. Because the moment we say that, no, this act was done independently, that is impossible. Everything, and that's why we also say, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-ali al-azim. That means every action that we do is by Allah's permission. But Allah has made a system that you can choose between right and wrong. So if you choose right, Allah will help you to do right. If you choose wrong, Allah will help you to do wrong. But if, for example, Allah blocks you in the wrong, that means, you know, you are forced to do right. And that is not according to the wisdom of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'asumin.
إلهنا ما عاد لك مليك كون لمن ملك لبيك قد لبيت لك.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Aperture.
Being the second largest country in the Middle East, Iran is rich with a colorful bouquet of architectural masterpieces, magnificent mosques, ancient caravanserais, impressive rock tombs, and former royal cities of the ancient Persian Empire. But perhaps Iran's amazing desert landscape has been largely overlooked. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Iran's deserts are unique in the variety of their composition and surface types. A yardang, or kalut, as they're called in Farsi, is a topographical feature that has been carved out of a surface by the wind. They're most commonly found in deserts where there is a sand supply, which abrades the surface when moved by the wind, and soft sedimentary rocks that the sand easily erodes. Over time, the sand wears down the surface into beautiful streamlined shapes that are aligned with the prevailing sand-moving winds. Iran is famous for mega yardangs in Kerman in the south of the country. Stay with us for this episode of Iran Trotter as we follow Javad to discover the spectacular kaluts in Iran.
To most humans, nature means trees, jungles, rivers, and mountains. But is that all there is to this beautiful nature created by the architect of all beauties? God is limitless. He is infinite and has created nature with infinite beauties. Nature has many and varied complicated aspects, and the natural world in Iran is no exception. Many people do not consider deserts and wastelands as part of nature. But the fact is, deserts constitute a large part of the environment on our planet. All we have to do is open our eyes and look at these countless, peerless beauties. Hi. I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm traveling to the most pristine areas of my beloved country and uncovering to you its many beauties.
This time, I've come to a vast city in Kerman province, a city that in fact forms a major swath of the amazing landscape in Kerman. The fictitious city of Kalutz. I set out on a 110-kilometer walking journey to the northeast of Kerman province to arrive at my main destination. The Yardangs are located in an area spanning 11,000 square kilometers in the west of Iran's Lut Desert. The Yardangs of Lut cover an area around 150 kilometers long and around 70 kilometers wide. In the words of some researchers, this vast expanse used to be the bed of a lake sometime in the third geological period, and that in fact the Yardangs, or the Kalutz, are made up of brittle sediments lying at the bottom of that lake. At some point in the third geological period, the lake dried up as a result of the major climatic changes that occurred on Earth. Torrential rains and their ensuing humidity in the following periods and water erosion led to the creation of the Kalutz, or Yardangs. Other researchers believe the Yardangs are the result of the alluvial deposits originating from Birjan Mountains in the distant past. Sharp temperature fluctuations in the Lut and the constant blowing of local winds carrying abrasive sediment loads of sandstones battering these Yardangs over the years have led to their erosion. Winds that continue to lash out at these Yardangs and eventually raise beautiful clay terraces to the ground. Trips to the heart of deserts and wastelands have always been risky, but studying up on such places and the risks involved in traveling to them, not to mention carrying a proper map, a GPS device, and the topographic map of the area you are traveling to, can bring the number of risks involved down to a great extent. In all fairness, one of the most beautiful areas in the Lut Desert is the Shahdad Yardangs of Kerman. I mean, there are few places in the world with such beautiful desert landscape. I think nowhere in the world can you find a landscape as vast as this one. I am in the Lut Yardangs, hoping for a good trip, and I'm positive it's gonna be a thrill. I stepped onto a part of the river that not many people were interested in traveling to for several reasons. The flight distance between the Yardangs and the Yalan mega dunes in the west of Lut is around 150 kilometers. For several consecutive years, part of the Yalan mega dunes was announced by NASA as one of the hottest spots on Earth. This is an area where temperatures run above 70 degrees in the summer, with no trace of life among them. The Yardangs of Lut look scary to human eyes. Although in recent years, some researchers have discovered and registered a number of plants and insect species in them. But at first look, the fictional town of Kalutz or Yardangs bears no trace of life of any kind. Encountering sandstorms in the desert or getting lost in them, or all the other hidden dangers of such terrains, can put your life at grave risk. But none of those reasons stop me from walking right into the Yardangs. You can enjoy spending time in this beautiful natural landscape with enough information on its climate and terrain, and by using a map and GPS device. No one has found any trace of human habitation in the Kalutz area. not in the past and not in the present eras. But on the outskirts of these beautiful kalutes, there are many remnants of human habitation from years gone by. The kalutes are located on the outskirts of Shahdad, a city in Kerman that is among the most ancient in Iran, a place with a more than 6,000-year-old culture and history. The world's oldest metal flag was discovered here. The many qanats and water reservoirs on the outskirts of the kalutes, as well as the lush gardens of Shahdad, are evidence of human settlement in the distant past. Right at the beginning of the route, I came across an area with a concentration of strange kalut formations, a place famous for its egg-shaped hills. I have to walk a long distance to get to the heart of the Shahdad Kalutes, but the beautiful elevations you see behind me, which is sort of the prelude to the main Kalutes, are called the egg-shaped hills, and for good reason. They really do look like eggs, although these hills are considered as little Kalutes. The reason they've been abraded more than the other Kalutes in this region is rainfalls and, of course, the type of soil they are made from. And if it goes on like this, rainwater and wind are going to destroy them in the not-too-distant future. Every spot you go to in this region, you see new and different kalutes or yardangs. The majority of those who travel to the kalutes are not aware of the diversity of the landscapes in this terrain and its natural phenomena. But the fact is, the kalutes of Kerman are a peerless kaleidoscope of beautiful desert landscapes. Everywhere you look in this region, you see spectacular yet peculiar sights. Around 7 kilometers after the egg-shaped hills, I arrived at another strange yet interesting scenery. From a distance, I thought I was approaching some prehistoric cemetery. But well, this is not a cemetery. These mounds you see here are called the Dolphin Hills. In fact, they are very small kalutes in the vicinity of the big ones. The dual action of wind abrasion and rainwater has chiseled them to look like dolphins swimming on a wave of dust and sand. Every part of the kalutes in Shahdad has its own unique shape. And these Dolphin Hills are among those unique parts of the Shahdad Kalutes. These are really extraordinary, really beautiful.